In this episode, I sat down virtually with Brandy Brossel-Zamdorian, a certified safety professional who helps manufacturing facilities build a robust and sustainable safety program. Brandy is south of the border in her consulting firm, Triangle Safety Consulting, located in Greenville, South Carolina. Brandy has over 8 years of experience in safety and industrial hygiene within the manufacturing facilities. Not only is Brandy a CSP, but she also has what I like to call a little bit of that alphabet soup going on behind her name. She's a Certified Safety Director, a CSD, and an Associate Safety Professional, an ASP.
This is your host, Amy Orsnow, and welcome to the Transmit Safety Podcast, a podcast that will help you achieve a holistic approach to workplace health and safety with practical solutions introducing new or alternative ways of approach to put that value of safety into action. So fill up that workplace approved beverage of your choice and tune in to today's episode.
Today's episode is featuring Brandy Brossel-Zamdorian, who is a certified safety professional running her own consulting organization, Triangle Safety Consulting, based out of South Carolina. And I think it is great that we have connected through social media, another kind of guest here on the podcast, where it really goes to show the power of social media and how you can really build your network through just simply being on Instagram or LinkedIn. And I think we originally connected through an online conference. Now, your consulting business, Triangle Safety, I know that there is a little bit of a history behind the name of that. And I would be honored if you kind of share a little bit about why you decided to name your company that.
Yeah, so I decided to name it Triangle Safety Consulting. You know, I was trying to figure out what I wanted to name it. And I was intrigued by the Triangle Shirtwaist Fire of 1911 in Manhattan in New York City. And basically what happened was there was, you know, this factory on three different floors high up in a high rise, a skyscraper. And a fire broke out on one of the floors. And, you know, when people tried to flee, doors were locked from the inside. And, you know, the owners did that so people wouldn't steal the blouses they were making. But of course, it led to 146 mostly immigrant women and girls. Like the age ranges were really like age 14 to 23. And they ended up either burning or, you know, dying from the smoke inhalation or jumping out the window to their own death. So it's kind of just an unfortunate event. But I kind of wanted to name my company to honor those victims because I felt like I can do something to help improve safety of these workplaces. So something horrible like this never happens again.
When we as people decide to become health and safety practitioners or professionals and then consultants above and beyond that, each one of us has our own particular reasons to do that. And I think one of the commonalities when I'm talking to safety people is that we care a lot. And it's so nice of you to recognize and honor some history within the U.S. occupational health and safety requirements. I think here in Canada, we say legislation is written in blood because legislation really doesn't get changed unless there's a huge mechanism, either due to an event or due to public outcry. And out of all of the things that you could have opted to do, why did you start your own consulting business?
So when I was an environmental health and safety specialist and a corporate environmental and safety manager, I was managing environmental programs or environmental remediation projects as well as safety. And to be honest, doing environmental tasks honestly did not make me happy. Safety is my passion and it's what I wanted to spend all my time doing. So I thought, if I worked for myself, you know, I could decide what I wanted to work on. So with that, you know, I started my own safety consulting business where I focus 100% of my time helping manufacturing facilities improve the safety. And I'm definitely happier only focusing on safety versus, you know, having both environmental. And I think it's crazy, honestly, that companies want to kind of push environmental health and safety all together. I think safety and health should actually
preach.
There's just so much to know about each one of those things. And the fact that they just expect us to put it together or know all three is just kind of insanity. So I really just want to focus my expertise just on safety.
I've even seen job titles as HSEQ, where they're not only then looking after environment, but quality as well. And it's like, holy macaroni. That is way too much of a specialization. Like you can't be, it would be so hard to even be a generalist in each one of those categories, let alone, Now I have zero history or experience within the manufacturing industry. So what made you decide to kind of specialize in manufacturing?
So I started off my career in industrial hygiene, and that position had me traveling to many different types of manufacturing facilities, from food, tobacco. I went to a few paper mills, textiles, all that fun stuff. And it was kind of during that position that I became fascinated with just manufacturing in general. Because I just think it's so cool that literally everything we own, it was made somewhere. I know that's super nerdy, but I just love the manufacturing sector. And when I see like manufacturing facilities on the highway, I'm just like, oh my gosh, like I wonder what they do. Like I'm just
Do you have a visitor orientation?
I'm just genuinely curious about what, you know, manufacturing companies do. So I'm passionate about safety and the manufacturing sector, and also just fascinated with manufacturing in general. So it's just a good place for me to be in.
Since you've been specializing in the manufacturing industry, what would you say is kind of the biggest or the common challenge regarding health and safety within that specific industry?
Yeah, I think this is a really great question. For the safety professional in manufacturing, I think the biggest challenge is usually just the company being lean and the safety professional not getting the support they need to do their job correctly, meaning they might have to take less time on things that should be getting their full attention. So, you know, sometimes the safety professional is the only person in their department, and they're challenged with doing so many things like managing the current safety and health programs. Sometimes we're training workers, we're doing inspections, audits, completing risk assessments, sometimes running the safety committee, responding to incidents. And while doing all that, we still have to put out, you know, the daily fires. And, you know, when I'd be walking just through the facility, I'd get asked hundreds of questions. So the challenge is managing so many things and not having the support and time to do everything that is required from, you know, the safety and health standards or to implement best practices that, you know, go above and beyond those standards. So I think safety professionals sometimes just need to swallow their pride a little bit of, you know, oh, I can get this done all by myself, and just ask for help, because all the company can do is say no, but it's just worth trying even to get like an entry level safety professional to help you manage everything that needs to be completed within those time frames. So I guess if you are currently struggling with managing health and safety at your workplace, I would write out everything you do and then, you know, pitch it to your management about why you need additional help. Or of course, you could just hire a safety and health consultant like Amy or myself to help you.
I was like, here comes the plug. Here comes the segue, which is great.
That's always a great option too.
Yeah. Well, sometimes when you do the math, it's cheaper to hire a consultant to come in, fix a problem, or work on a particular project, because that consultant is an in and out transactional fee at times. Now, obviously, we as consultants want to build relationships and have recurring clients in that perspective. But so when you say lean, are you talking about like the organizations run like the Six Sigma lean? from a mentality, or just like the profit margin is really low, so they're not willing to expand beyond what the capacity of who's ever saying, like, I don't need any help, I could do it. Like, can you maybe clarify that? I'm kind of curious.
Yeah, when I say lean, I mean more like management thinks safety professionals don't do that much, I feel like. And plus, we're like in we're like in overhead too, right? Like, we don't make money for the company. So when I say lean, I mean that they think, okay, one person can handle 1,000 workers, which is insanity. You know what I mean? So I think sometimes management needs to really understand, okay, how much are we actually doing? And, you know, more safety professionals are needed to manage all the program requirements that are necessary to have, you know, a safe workplace, essentially.
So what I'm hearing is kind of like there's a little bit of a discrepancy in terms of like the internal responsibility system. A lot of the actions within the manufacturing industry still land on the health and safety person versus integrated within supervision, management, and safety kind of does the oversight.
Yes.
When you said 1,000 workers for one safety person, my jaw dropped.
What?
Like, I've been on projects where I'm like, oh, there's 50 people on this and I'm the only safety person. And I've worked for other organizations where, you know, there's a crew of 200 and there's 2 safety people, but the supervisors are doing the inspections. The supervisors are doing the competency. So it's an interesting dynamic, I think, to try to navigate, especially if it's not standard within the industry.
Yeah. And I've seen crazy things like that. Like, that's bad. But, you know, when I was an EHS specialist, there was 2 of us for around 750 people. And it's just like, okay, this is, and, you know, we were doing training and obviously managing all the programs. It just, yeah, it can get insane. So I think that's where like the big challenge comes in, is having management understand, you know, there's a lot that needs to be done and we need more. Mm-hmm. We literally need humans to help us accomplish our goals if we want, you know, a health and safe workplace.
No, one of the things, speaking about healthy and safe workplaces, I noticed on your Instagram, and if you aren't following Brandy on her Instagram yet, you have to, because it is phenomenal. I love your content.
Thank you.
You did like a year in review of all of the places that you have traveled doing audits. And I had a little bit, I'm going to be honest, I had a little bit of like green envy because you went to some phenomenal places. What has been your favorite place to do audits when you're traveling? Because like, you were in Japan, you were in France.
Oh yeah. So 2022 was definitely full of traveling around the world performing health and safety audits. I went to El Salvador, France, Northern Ireland, Japan, and South Korea.
That's my traveler's dream.
Yeah, those are some good countries for sure. But El Salvador honestly was so beautiful, and the people in the facility were so friendly. I really liked going there. But I would have to say my favorite place to visit was France. And, you know, I was never a person who was like, oh my gosh, like I need to go to Paris. But honestly, it's so worth it. And I think it's one of my favorite cities I've ever visited, because the designs of the building are beautiful. They have like creative architecture. And not one building like looks the same. They're all just unique. And of course, the food was absolutely amazing. I really think French cuisine is my favorite.
Pastries.
Oh, yeah. So if you ever get the chance to go to France, I would definitely recommend it. It's worth it. And you don't even have to go to Paris either. Like, I was auditing in a town called Dijon, and the buildings were also beautiful there. The city was amazing. So yeah, I was traveling around the world, but for my safety consulting business now, my focus is on helping manufacturing facilities improve OSHA compliance only in the United States. So I think I'm going to be done with traveling around the world. I mean, it was fun while it lasted.
Yeah,
but I'm really wanting just to focus my business on OSHA regulations and just manufacturing in the United States. So I'm ready to stay here.
And when you were doing audits, what type of, like when you say doing audits, was there a particular standard or audit protocol that you use within the manufacturing industry or that you are recommending within your consulting business?
So when I was auditing those facilities, I was actually still in the corporate environmental and safety role that I was in. So I was auditing them per our corporate standards, which is pretty much the OSHA standard since the headquarters is United States. So, but yeah, we would use our corporate health and safety guidance and kind of just audit what we thought needed to be in place. So I'm not an expert in any of those like countries' health and safety standards because that would be insanity to know all of them. It was more just on the corporate standard side.
Okay. And is that something within the manufacturing industry is fairly common? There are internal corporate health and safety audits that they're using?
Yeah. Usually corporate kind of sets the standard like, okay, you need to at least conform to this. It's kind of like having a federal OSHA be like the corporate EHS people, and then like the state plans can choose what they want to do, but they have to at least be as strict as like the federal, you know what I mean?
Okay.
So different, like if there's a corporate headquarters, they usually create standards. And then, you know, the manufacturing facilities around the world have to at least abide to those standards or be more strict. That's how it usually works.
Yeah, interesting. Here in Canada, we have programs within each one of our provinces or territories called the Certificate of Recognition. And what that Certificate of Recognition is that the government in each one of the provinces or territories has created a minimum requirement for legislation as to what your health and safety program or manual needs to include.
River.
And then associations have created audit standards based on that.
Okay.
So you can get your core either through a certifying partner, and that standard is kind of industry set. But I'm also starting to see a little bit of transition or change or discussion into the ISO 45001.
Okay.
And so I noticed that you, you know, said or mentioned that you have that ISO training. And I'm kind of curious, are you seeing that standard kind of pick up or be recognized more within the manufacturing industry? Because ISO has environmental standards, they have quality standards, they have health and safety standards.
Yeah. So I think definitely more facilities are putting effort into obtaining the ISO 45001 certification. But I have noticed that, unfortunately, it's not really about improving the safety. And the motivation to become ISO 45001 or ISO 45001 certified comes from the business leaders, because their customers want, you know, their suppliers to have the certification. So, you know, customers want to buy from companies who care about safety, and that ISO standard is a great way to show your customers that, you know, you're a step ahead of other companies when it comes to having like a robust safety program. But I've had many companies recently actually reach out to me to help them review their ISO 45001 documentation and processes to make sure they are conforming to the standards. And really not too many companies, at least in the United States, have this certification. But in my opinion, it truly does improve a facility safety program if you conform to the requirements. So I think if you're looking for, you know, the next step of improving your company's safety program, you should definitely look into obtaining ISO 45001. But with that being said, it is a lot of work to maintain.
Yeah.
And you absolutely need management support, their commitment, and of course, you need the time to implement all the requirements of the standard.
Did you just add to the pile of things that health and safety people are supposed to do? It's like, do everything, put out all the fires, do all of your leading indicators, and on the side, try to tackle getting certified as well. But I think what you mentioned in terms of getting management support is so key. Regardless of what you're trying to do within your department, having that management support, not only for the right people with the right training and the right mindset, the right equipment, the right tools, the right budget supporting it is you need that or you're just going to sink or you're going to bang your head against the wall going like, I'm trying to do all this work and they don't get it. And in when I have conversations with my clients and when I'm talking with my health and safety coaching clients, I always remind them to try and think like a manager or think like the owner of the company to say, what are you doing that's going to help them reach their organizational goals?
Perfect.
So if they want to increase market share by 5%, if they want to go in and increase their profit margin, how can your health and safety metrics help them get there? And that's where I've gotten the most success in getting that buy-in. So how does the ISO certification, you know, help them reach their goals where you're going to open up doors to new clients, as you mentioned, who only hire those people with certifications. And then it's knowing the cost of getting certified, maintaining the certification, and is it worth it from a business direction? But then also, is it going to be a value add for the health and safety program? I don't know about you, but as an auditor, I go in and sometimes they just slap programs together or like they've just hodgepodge things together because, you know, the client said that they need it or somebody had this great idea and it's like, your program is wonky and that's why it's not working. Like you need to be really intentional about what you do and how you do it and why you're doing it.
Yeah.
That's just my little rant of the podcast.
Absolutely.
You not only work for yourself as a consultant, you are a phenomenal volunteer. Like when we talk about volunteerism, the JJ Keller Safety Professional of the Year Award in 2020, the 2022 Young Professional Safety Excellence Award runner up from the EHS Daily Advisor. You're the president of the American Society of Safety Professionals in Piedmont chapter.
That's right.
Executive board for the Air and Waste Management Association, the South Atlantic States section. Like, wow, do you give a lot in terms of back to the community from all of that? But then you're also an editor for Safety Nights as well, creating content and sharing safety information from Safety Nights, the newsletter, yourself on your website, your blog, your Instagram, your reels. Why is it important for you to kind of develop and provide content to the health and safety community?
So, yeah, I really love giving back to, as you said, the health and safety community. I love volunteering. I just love being a part of a community where we all just kind of have the same goals, and that's just keep people safe, essentially. And as we talked about in the beginning, you said like empathy, or we talked about how safety professionals care a lot, and empathy is a huge characteristic of mine. And that's, I guess, why I fit perfectly in this industry. But yeah, I love writing. I love blogging. And I love the social media aspect, connecting with everyone. And it's just fun, to be honest, to be on social media and just to speak with other people that have the same problems as you and just kind of coming up with solutions that can help, you know, improve the health and safety of the workplace.
Sometimes when I'm talking with health and safety people, it's like, oh, I have no idea what my toolbox talk is going to be. And tomorrow or like, oh, I have my monthly safety meeting in a week and I don't know what my topic is. And I'm very structured. Like I sit down at the beginning of the year and I do a full on calendar with like, this is my toolbox talks. These are my safety meetings. And now as a consultant, I'm like, here's my blog post. Here's my ideas for my website. Here's my ideas for my social media content. And I get that through conversations and listening to other people about what their concerns are. But how do you decide on what topics to write? Like, how do you decide on what to create or what to write for content?
Yeah. So with my safety consulting business, my focus really is to help the small and medium-sized manufacturing facilities that either don't have a safety professional or they have a safety professional that just needs assistance with their program. So I want to help them improve their compliance with OSHA. And I know OSHA is the bare minimum, but these small manufacturing facilities literally have nothing in place to help protect their employees. And I know that if I can at least get them started by getting them into compliance with those standards, it will make the workplace safer. And that's why a lot of the time my blog content is the basics. It's how to get in compliance with the power and industrial truck standard, which is forklifts, or the basics of the lockout tagout standard. And recently I've been writing about, you know, the OSHA 300A summary of injuries, which employers need to post from February 1st to February 30th. And then for safety nights, so if you don't know what that is, it's a free community where you can ask questions and you can post anonymously without your name.
Unsponsored plug, by the way. Unsponsored plug promotion.
Yeah, for sure. And I work for them, so I get paid to write their safety newsletter as well. But I really do love the community because it has around 3,300 safety professionals. And yeah, I write the weekly newsletter that it gets sent to those people. And it's just a fun newsletter. Like, the top of the newsletter is just about citations and violations that companies have gotten. And you actually get to click the link to the citation, which allows you to see not only like the citation they got cited for, but also like what were the specific details that they did get cited for. So it's kind of good to see like, okay, is this applicable to my facility? And then with that newsletter too, you know, you get a safety tip from me and then some news with, you know, maybe OSHA updates or anything like that. So yeah, it's just, I love writing blogs. It's fun. And I, like I said, my goal is just to try to teach people the basics because sometimes these small businesses, they literally just don't know anything. And I want to try to at least get them into compliance.
I like reading the newsletter and I pop in and out of that community because I find it's very US heavy.
Yes.
In terms of the safety people who are on there. And then I'm coming in from a Canadian perspective and I'm like, oh, we do things a little bit differently up here on this side of the border. Or, oh, that's the legislation. Like your recent requirement about reporting for OSHA. I'm like, I had no idea that that was a need or a requirement. So I'm learning with every post that you put out because I've never worked in the US.
Yeah.
And I've never had any clients. I very intentionally don't take any clients outside of the Canadian landscape because I'm just not familiar enough with that.
Exactly.
All of the OSHA requirements.
Yeah. And that's kind of my goal too, is just for me to stick just United States. Like if I have a client ever that was just in Canada, I'd be like, Amy, you could take, I'll give you Amy's contact.
Yeah, here's the referral. And I think that that goes to show just the importance of having your professional network. Like who can rely on or who can you refer to? Because yeah, you just can't know everything. But one of the things I wanted to ask you is if somebody was interested in starting their own blog, either internally within their organization on, I don't know, their SharePoint site or externally for their own kind of growth and promotion, what kind of tips would you have for maybe starting a blog or starting creating content on a more frequent basis?
So I guess I would say to not wait until you feel like your writing is perfect, because a lot of the time we write content and maybe think it's not good enough. And so we don't release it. But I would just say, just write what you want to talk about and get it out there, because chances are you have experience and knowledge that others may not have, and it's likely to be, you know, valuable to others to hear from your experiences or, you know, maybe best practices that you've put into place.
And from that, it's like you're very much online. Like I see you everywhere, and I mean that in the best way. You've also increased your followers quite a bit within the last year for your online profile. Within the current kind of like online way society is going, how important do you think it is for a health and safety practitioner to have an online presence, whether or not that's LinkedIn or Instagram, or I'm not going to say the Twitter. I think everybody get off Twitter or even on other platforms. But how important do you think it is to have an online presence?
Yeah. So I think for us, like for safety and health consultants, I really do think it's important. So just potential clients know we exist and we're,
yeah, that's true.
And we're available to help them with their health and safety programs. But I think if I had to choose one social network to be on that I see the most benefit for my business, and it's probably the same for you, is LinkedIn. And I mean, it's the place where I get clients reaching out to me the most versus Twitter and Instagram. But I would say if you're like a, you know, a safety and health professional who works, you know, in construction or manufacturing or oil and gas or anything like that, I think it's important to be on LinkedIn because it's basically your public resume. And being on LinkedIn when I was an EHS specialist and corporate EHS manager, I would have companies or recruiters actually reach out to me because they liked my experience and, you know, they wanted to know if I was interested in a new position at their company. So I think having an up-to-date LinkedIn profile presents like great job opportunities that you may not have even known about. And then, yeah, for Twitter, I just think Twitter is a fun place to like communicate with the safety community. If you have like those random safety thoughts that you're just like, what do I do with this thought? Let me just plop it into Twitter. And then Instagram's honestly just more for fun. Like I've been having a lot of fun making those reels and I really don't have many clients reaching out to me from Instagram, but you know, making those safety videos is just a part of my day where I can just be creative and kind of just relax. So I think the bottom line is that it's really important to be on LinkedIn, but you don't need to feel compelled to be on Instagram or Twitter. But, you know, just know that these platforms do have safety communities on them if you do decide to join us.
And in my previous life as a hiring manager, when a resume landed in front of me, I would see whether or not that person, you know, was on my LinkedIn profile. I would see who they're connected to in my network. I definitely use LinkedIn to kind of do a little bit of sleuthing prior to doing a resume review or doing an interview. So I think it's important, but then I'm also a little bit biased from that perspective in terms of like where we are and
yeah, and I mean, I would totally agree with you, though. There's like, I mean, when we were trying to hire, you know, when I was in my corporate EHS position, we would try to hire people and, you know, resumes would come in. But, you know, I'd still like to see what else they have going on their LinkedIn. And sometimes, they just wouldn't even exist. And I'm like, okay, who is this person, you know, if they don't even have a LinkedIn? Because I just feel like it is really important.
Do you volunteer? Do you volunteer in the same organizations that I volunteer? Do you have, you know, certain credentials that maybe you didn't put on your resume because they're not relevant? But speaking about credentials, you have quite a bit of an alphabet soup behind your name with a CSP, an ASP, a CSD. Like, what was the motivation behind getting these credentials or these acronyms?
Yeah, so I really wanted to get the CSP or the Certified Safety Professional credential because I wanted to prove to myself that even though I do not have a formal health and safety degree, that I'm still knowledgeable and capable in the safety and health profession because of my experience, you know, in industrial hygiene and as an EHS specialist and a corporate EHS manager. So I really think it just gives me more confidence as a safety professional, knowing I passed these multiple hard tests. And I really think it does help to minimize that imposter syndrome that a lot of us feel. But by the way, I do have a bachelor's degree in biology, just not like specifically in safety and health.
It's relevant. Adjacent. I have a degree in cultural anthropology and it's relevant. Adjacently.
Kind of, yes. But also, I think being a safety consultant in the United States, many manufacturing facilities recognize that CSP credentials like in and out of the industry. So I think manufacturing facilities see the credential and know, you know, you're probably more likely to be competent and credible as a safety professional. than maybe those who don't have those safety credentials, which helps me out as a consultant, because I feel like, you know, if they see that, they're probably more likely to hire me as a safety consultant versus someone who doesn't. So I guess the credentials at the end of my name, you know, they're just there to remind me that I am a subject matter expert in health and safety profession. And, you know, I have the experience and knowledge to help others in their health and safety journey. So I think if you do have imposter syndrome, and a lot of the time women do feel this, especially young women, I recommend really studying and getting some type of safety credential behind your name so you can kind of improve your self-confidence as a safety professional.
Now, speaking about helping others, you also created a CSP study guide. And I noticed that you promote that on your website and things like that. But what was the motivation behind creating a study guide for the CSP exam?
Yeah, I was having so many people message me on LinkedIn or other social media sites, you know, just asking me, what do I need to study to pass the CSP? Because, you know, I had the credential. So honestly, it really just made sense to me to create my own CSP questions, answers, and like explanations workbook, since I had already passed the CSP and had, you know, experience taking it. I know I could be able to help others in their journey to try to attain those safety credentials.
Okay, very cool. Now, you mentioned where you are online a few times, but if my listeners wanted to connect with you, what is the easiest way to find you or to connect with you if they want to continue on their conversation with you?
Yeah, so you can find me, as I said, on LinkedIn, really big there. Just search Brandy Bossels Adorian. And if you're on Twitter or Instagram, my username is just Safety Brand. So SafetyBran. Or you can email me at brandy@trianglesafetyllc.com. Or you can just send me a contact through my website, which is trianglesafetyllc.com.
Excellent. And I'll be sure to include all of those links in the show notes for this episode. That's it.
Thanks for listening to Transmit Safety. Be sure to visit transmitsafety.com to join in the conversation, access the show notes, and discover our fantastic resource section, including the ability to sign up for our weekly newsletter. Thanks for listening. Until next time.